Good mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, Monday Motivation for Couples on Winning Together, 8 Keys to Building a Thriving Marriage, Lessons in Overcoming Society's Impossible Standards, and the Unrealistic Expectations We Often Place on Ourselves. Also this morning, Findlay police are set to release body cam video of last week's fatal shooting later today, the standard protocol to ensure transparency, but potentially traumatic for all involved. Helping our pets live their best lives, the latest trends and highlights from this year's Super Zoo Pet Product Expo. And happening around town, members of the cast will join us to preview the Fort Findlay Playhouse second stage production of The Diary of Anne Frank. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Monday, August 17th, 2026. Going to be a busy, busy morning. A lot to talk about on the program this morning. This is really interesting. Among the first things you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day, a new bipartisan bill would do away with those flock cameras in the state of Ohio. Now, if you're familiar with this, these are the cameras that have been popping up all over the state, all over the country, really, that help police monitor the movement of people, particularly bad guys. There have been concerns about the misuse of these cameras. And last week, the company behind the flock cameras announced that they were implementing enhanced safeguards to make sure that the technology is not abused. But apparently a lot of folks saying too little too late. And now this bipartisan effort has been introduced, being reviewed by state lawmakers. State Representative Levi Dean, a Republican, and Representative Tristan Rader, a Democrat, have co-introduced a measure that would ban the automated license plate readers and other AI-assisted surveillance technology statewide. So this has covered the flock cameras and anything else that may come down the pike along the same lines. Representative Dean says he helped draft the bill because the job of the legislature and the courts is to protect people's rights, not make the police's job as easy as possible. And he's right. I mean, for those who might say, hey, we need to support law enforcement. Of course we need to support law enforcement, but it would be a lot easier on law enforcement if they didn't have to have search warrants, if they didn't have to have probable cause to haul you off to jail, if they didn't have to prove in a court of law beyond a reasonable doubt that you were guilty before throwing you in jail. Those things would be easier, but it's not about making law enforcement's job easier. It's about protecting people's rights. And a lot of folks are looking at these flock cameras and say, this is exactly what we were warned about in 1984, in the original dystopian book about, the future of technology and all of that. This is, that kind of coming to pass. Now, a lot of law enforcement agencies across the state use these flock cameras, saying that they help find violent criminals and missing persons, and they make communities safer, and that may be, but at what price? The bill that would prohibit the cameras still being reviewed by the Legislative Service Commission. So stay tuned. Kind of interesting stuff there. By the way, speaking of, like we said, this kind of like what George Orwell warned us about in 1984. Speaking of being warned about the future, Tomorrowland, the Disneyland kind of themed area all about the future, is getting a makeover. Park officials at Disneyland made the announcement over the weekend at the D23 convention in Anaheim, convention about all things Disney. And they didn't offer too many details, but they said planning has begun on the classic Disneyland theme area to update this for a new century. Officials said the updated Tomorrowland will have new features and more open spaces with immersive storytelling and emotional experiences. The park is reportedly hoping to transform Tomorrowland in time for Disneyland's 75th anniversary. Which, would be perfect timing. Fun fact, Tomorrowland, and I don't know if you've ever been to Disney, but Tomorrowland was the last of the original theme areas in the original park to be finished. It was largely still under construction when the park first opened, what, in 1956, something like that? And in its original incarnation, Tomorrowland imagined the future of the world in the year 1986. That's what Tomorrowland was when Disneyland officially originally opened. Envisioned a world in 1986. So it's probably about due for a facelift since 1986 is like 40 years ago now. So let's see here. So Tomorrowland is 40 years in the past. Anyway, speaking of technology, this may be the first time it has happened, but you have to think it will probably not be the last. The artificial intelligence agent running a San Francisco store has fired its first human employee. Andon Labs said Thursday that Luna, the AI manager of Andon Market, which is an experimental retail store that is run entirely by AI. They implemented this concept, and now Luna, the AI manager, decided to fire an employee after repeated lateness and other workplace issues. Apparently, the employee arrived late for 17 out of 23 scheduled work shifts. 17 out of 23 times this employee was late. The violations were revealed after Andon Labs asked Luna to search her memory for its policies and determine if this worker was still a good fit. You know, I'm not sure that this is, on second thought, I'm not sure if this is really news. I mean, if you show up late for your job nearly 75% of the time, I don't think AI would be unique in its conclusion that you should be fired. You know what I mean? I don't think that AI was really out of line on this. But that's the first recorded instance of artificial intelligence firing a human employee. Probably deserved it, though. Probably deserved it. And a couple of other items here. Among the first things you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day, new study published in the journal Family Relations finds that married couples who exercise, either together or separately, married couples who exercise report having stronger marriages. Like better communication, fewer arguments, and more positive conflict resolution. Now, when I saw this, my first thought was, that's probably because they're too exhausted to fight with each other. They're too exhausted to argue if they're exercising all the time. But those who exercise together have slightly better outcomes. Not much. I mean, it really doesn't matter together or separate, just that you exercise. But if you exercise together, you're even better off. And walking ranked among the most common shared activities for couples that exercise together. They just gives them a chance to communicate, eliminate the distractions, and so on. Authors of the study suggest that therapists, couples therapy, that therapists could recommend shared physical activity as a low-cost tool for couples to sort of reconnect, work out their differences, and so on. And so, if you're struggling with your spouse, you might try it. I'm just kind of an interesting study there. And lastly here, among the first things you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. Every story, we've got to have a doom and every day we got to have a doom and gloom story. You know, something that, woe is me. This isn't really doom and gloom. We're all going to die. But this is, this is serious stuff that we're worried about. Apparently, the bird flu across Asia has created an unexpected crisis for badminton players. The price of shuttlecocks for badminton players has skyrocketed because of the diminishing supply of bird feathers to be used in the shuttlecocks used to play badminton. Quality shuttlecocks, it says, require 16 feathers from a single wing of a duck or goose, with each bird yielding only 2 to 3 usable feathers. So badminton experts say a tube of a dozen mid-range shuttlecocks has jumped from somewhere between $30 and $35 a decade ago to well over $70 today because of the bird flu and the culling of bird flocks worldwide. Apparently, clubs in Western Australia have been hit the hardest, with retail prices up as much as 50% due to the reliance on imports. The Great Southern Badminton Association spends $3,000 on shuttlecocks every 4 to 6 months. This is a huge expense, and it's getting serious. Clubs are now reluctantly exploring synthetic alternatives, although players widely consider them inferior. Whatever will we do, the game of badminton may be in danger because of the bird flu. My, my, my. There you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Monday morning started.
You want local sports? You've got lots of it at the WFIN Sports Archive. Play or download the Coach's Corner shows, plus games from your favorite teams, the Finley Trojans, the BBC, and Ottawa Glendorf. Have the power of local sports at your fingertips with the Sports Audio Archive. Check it out by clicking Game Audio Archive under the Sports tab at WFIN.com.
A little Monday motivation for couples this morning on Winning Together, 8 Keys to Building a Thriving Marriage. We are joined today by Chiron and Rebecca Richardson, founders and pastors of Truth Church in Jersey City, New Jersey, with a simple goal: to help couples win in love and life by building a marriage that lasts. Well, it sounds simple anyway, but that's not to say that it doesn't take work.
Absolutely, absolutely. It takes... Well, we often say marriage does take work. It just shouldn't feel like a job.
That's right. And listen, when you read our book, you will see that we had to overcome a whole lot of struggles to get to the point where we could share these principles and keys in order to help couples.
Absolutely.
Would it be fair to say that it takes even more work now than it did, say, a generation or two ago? I mean, we are so bombarded with these carefully curated social media images of what we think the perfect relationship is supposed to look like, that it is harder than ever to live up to our own expectations oftentimes.
Well, I mean, so I would say it this way. I would say that it takes more work from the standpoint of doing what works, right? Because we live in a time where everything has become so instant. It reminds me of cooking, right? It's so easy to Uber something. What the real cooking is that slow cooking that Big Mom and them used to do. So I think the same thing in marriages. It's the same principles that have always worked, but we have to work harder to work at it because people want instant success.
Yes. And to also speak to the point of social media, only because I just saw this morning, but apparently there's a whole new movement called quiet quitting in marriage. Mm. And this is taking on such, with social media, it's taking on such a wide storm spread of this information going out that, you know, people are unhappy in their marriages And rather than divorcing or even seeking help in order to restore their marriage, they're just quietly quitting their marriages. They're emotionally checking out. Yeah. And so, yes, I also do think that social media and the access to technology is sometimes negatively impacting marriages and just even the sacredness of marriage.
And I think that speaks to the other question, the companion question of that. When we, you know, set the bar so high, we also don't want to run the risk of lowering the bar. I mean, that's not the answer either.
Absolutely. And again, I think a thing that happens is that social media is always the after picture, never the before picture.
Right.
Yeah.
So people have this unrealistic expectation because they don't see that you had to put some makeup on. You had to get dressed, all the other things you had to do to make the picture look as good as it does.
Yeah,
exactly.
So in the book, you put your ministerial background together with personal stories in offering these 8 keys to building a thriving marriage. Now, I know we don't have time to get into all of the details here, and obviously you want people to get the book. So, but what are some of the essential keys, some of the basics?
So one of the keys that we start the book out with is knowing your spouse, right? Mm-hmm. Because a lot of times people, they marry somebody, but they never really get to take the time to get to know the person that they're marrying. They love the package, but they don't take the time to unwrap it to see what's really going on.
Now, what you'll find out when you read our book, though, that we had to learn this, right?
Oh, my God.
And this is a key that we put in there that actually goes against our own story, because
right.
We met and 3 weeks later were married.
I was going to mention that because I found that completely fascinating that you got married just 3 weeks after you met. You don't recommend that, do you?
At all. No, do not do that. Listen, disclaimer, don't do it.
Thanks be to God, we have now been married for over 33 years. Right. And so it was, it worked for us. But looking back, right, they always say hindsight is what, 2020.
Right.
Looking back, we do realize that that's not the norm.
Right.
And so taking the time to get to know your spouse, know their background, their upbringing, their values, their morals, their aspirations, it's vital. Knowing their family.
Oh, my God.
Get to know their family.
Please.
Because nowadays people say, well, I'm not marrying your mama.
You're marrying that family, brother. We don't know. Because as a matter of fact, we put a story in the book of how when my wife, the first 2 times she met my family, the first time one of my relatives tried to rob us. And then the second time another person
they
stole us sneaking. And I said, you have been initiated. Welcome to the family.
So it sounds like that's kind of the foundational building block. Where do you go from there?
Mm-hmm. So another thing we talk about is, of course, communication, right? And so getting to know each other is important in communicating, because we share in the book how, because we come from 2 different backgrounds, I grew up in a family where we knew how to fight. We knew how to fight strong, but we loved each other when the fight was over.
Mm-hmm.
My wife comes up from a family where they don't argue in terms of degrading each other, right? Mm-hmm. And so when we would start to have disagreements, we would have, it would be contentious because I would communicate the way I was raised in my family.
Right.
And I would say whatever I had to say to win the fight. And she's over there saying, how in the world did you say something like that to me when you said you loved me? So knowing each other leans into having better communication.
Yes, exactly. And communication is vital, right? In any relationship, right? We're coming at it from a standpoint of marriage, but we know that you have to communicate in any relationship, in every aspect of life. And it is very important also, talking about communication kind of leads into another key that is important in marriage, and that's fighting fair.
Fighting fair.
Fighting fair, because guess what? Again, those 2 people from 2 different backgrounds are coming together and they're becoming one, and there are going to be some butting of the heads.
Always going to be. Matter of fact, there's a chapter entitled Rules of Engagement.
Uh-huh.
Because it's impossible to believe that you're going to marry somebody that you'll never disagree with.
Exactly.
The key is learning how to disagree in a way that doesn't devalue the person that you marry.
Exactly. So that communication too.
And with each of these chapters, and again, we just hit a few of the highlights here, but with each one of these chapters, you actually lay out a game plan, if you will, to sort of put those principles in action. Because again, to hear you talk about it, it sounds easy, but it can be anything but.
Right, because so when we wrote the book, I was sort of leading the charge in terms of the concept. So we tried to make it almost like a sporting team, mm-hmm. To where in order for a team to win a championship, it doesn't just take the coach just telling them what to do. He has to give them a game plan. Mm-hmm. So we wanted people to have a game plan that they could apply. So they're not just hearing these, like you said, these things that sound good, but how do I put these things into action? So at the end of each chapter, we give them a game plan of how to do that thing with your spouse.
Right. And that's what I was going to say. You have to execute, right?
You have to execute
the game plan. And again, we're 33 plus years in.
Right.
This is decades of working this, right? Learning from mistakes, learning from our errors, having pitfalls, having challenges that we had to overcome. Sometimes we didn't overcome them the first time around.
Right? That's right.
All right. Sometimes it took us. Sometimes we had to repeat and then learn again. But the thing is that you do have to execute. You do have to work at it. And you have to commit.
Right.
You have to commit. Again, we commit to our marriage daily.
Yes.
Daily we say we're going to commit to this relationship.
It strikes me that this is the kind of thing where you can go from cover to cover, which is probably a great, especially first time through, but then you can also kind of jump in right at the point where you know you are struggling and sort of set your priorities based on where you are in your own relationship.
Absolutely. And that's what we had in mind. We wanted to write something that, right, you can go from cover to cover and get something out of it. But then you have a situation where I may not need communication today. We might need to talk about money. So you can go straight to that chapter to deal with money matters. And so wherever you are, you can pretty much find something in there that will address what you're dealing with at the time.
Yes, exactly.
So again, Chiron and Rebecca Richardson with us this morning. The book is Winning Together, 8 Keys to Building a Thriving Marriage. Again, with 30 plus years of experience behind it. You have a website where folks can learn more about the book, right?
Yes, our website is ShyNBecca. That's ShyNBecca.com. You can also reach us on all social media platforms at ShyNBecca, spelled the same way. So YouTube, Facebook, Instagram. They're talking about bringing back MySpace, so we'll jump on there too if they do.
At Grandma's house, Grandma got our website on the wall.
So perfect.
Please, go on, log on, find out more, and buy the book. We really believe it will bless your life because we have been very transparent in our own journey to a thriving marriage, and we want to be an important part of you achieving that as well.
Perfect. Again, Chiron and Rebecca Richardson with us this morning. Thanks so very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
No problem. Thank you for having us.
Later today, Findlay police are set to release body cam video of last week's fatal shooting at a press conference. The standard protocol in cases like this, obviously, to ensure transparency and accountability, but also something that can be traumatic for all involved. And we are joined this morning by Findlay Fraternal Order of Police Lodge 20 Foundation President Therese White. And first of all, to be clear, you are not involved in any of this in any way, shape, or form, nor are you involved in the support structure that officers have access to through any law enforcement agency. But I know that you have had these conversations both with officers and the powers that be within a number of departments. And, you know, it's like we kind of alluded to, obviously, this is very important to put this information out for the public. It's the reason we have body cameras. But it also you result in a case where you could sort of rehash this video and it will get shared out there and analyzed and reanalyzed by armchair analysts over and over and over again, this can be certainly very traumatic for everybody involved in the case.
Yeah. Good morning, Chris. This afternoon, there will be a press conference and a body cam video will be released. That is my understanding. I got the press release along with everyone else.
Yeah.
And anytime that there is a loss of life, it is a very tragic situation. And now we have someone who is mourning a family member, and we also have a department who has been traumatized yet again. When we have an officer-involved shooting, that tends to be what makes the news. However, since our last officer-involved shooting, I would hazard to even guess how many actual traumatic events our officers have dealt with, how many death notifications they've delivered to grieving family members, how many fatal car accidents they've responded to, how many times that they've been threatened or that their families have been threatened or other traumatic events. I want to emphasize, this is just the one that makes the news. Mm-hmm. Our officers every day are dealing with terrible, horrible things so that we don't have to. They're protecting us. They're standing between us and danger. And this is something that I would encourage everyone to remember at all times. If you're having an encounter with a police officer, say perhaps you got pulled over and that encounter didn't go very well, you feel maybe you weren't treated very nicely or the police officer was a little gruff, I'd encourage you to find some grace because you have absolutely no idea what they're just coming from.
Right.
Law enforcement is one of the few professions where we ask people to deal with death and then come home to their families for dinner, mm-hmm. or to hold a child's hand as they take their last breath. And then they go home and they coach their son's little league game. There's very few other times or professions where this isn't just part of the job. It's demanded of them. It is expected of them. So what they should expect from us is patience and grace and understanding.
Yeah. Again, neither of us have any particular insight into this particular case or what this video will show. We haven't seen it, and we don't know any more about the case than what has been released publicly. But based on what we do know, it appears to be a case of suicide by cop. We have talked about this before, of all of the different reasons why an officer may be called on to discharge their weapon in the line of duty. This would be, I would imagine, the hardest to reconcile, as you were just talking about, and move forward.
So one of the hallmarks of trauma is how it impacts you. And it impacts everyone differently. Mm-hmm. We could have an officer deal, two separate officers deal with exactly the same situation in completely different manners. I could imagine being, again, an untrained professional, anytime I would have to draw my weapon would be frightening for me.
Yeah.
It would leave a lasting impact because the only time you do draw your weapon is to save lives. So that means that you're drawing your weapon because lives are in danger. Mm-hmm. So I could imagine that would be extremely traumatic, something difficult to deal with. I do look forward to having everything out there in the essence of transparency. Questions will be answered. But again, anytime a question is answered, another one or two tend to pop up in its place. Mm-hmm. So this afternoon will definitely be a mixed bag. I know none of us like to have our jobs questioned. None of us like to have somebody wonder why we did what we did and then tell us that they would have done something differently.
Yeah.
And inevitably, that's what happens after something like this. Mm-hmm. You don't like people doing that with your job.
Sure.
I would encourage people not to do that with those that have been very highly trained to do theirs.
Yeah. We mentioned the support structure. And again, this is not necessarily, you're not involved with the departments and the way the various law enforcement agencies and the way they structure their support for officers who have been involved in this. But we have talked about this in the past and the need, the necessity for this to be point of emphasis, or this be a high priority for law enforcement agencies everywhere. which fortunately it seems as though that has been the case, that these support mechanisms, both within and outside the departments, are much more readily available than they used to be.
As we've seen in the last, I would say, dozen years or so, the stigma of mental health is very, very slowly changing. Mm-hmm. As with any form of change, the pendulum swings very, very slowly. But yes, our mental health is more readily available for officers. The old-fashioned suck it up, buttercup, this is what you signed up for,
right,
tends to be going by the wayside. Support is more readily available. For example, our foundation is 5 years old. We are a reactive foundation, so anytime someone reaches out to us for support, we have that. We do not provide mental health. However, we do provide significant mental health resources that have been carefully cultivated for us, specific for law enforcement families. We do have an unofficial motto: if we can't fix it, we'll feed it. So anytime there is a situation, if somebody needs support in that fashion, we will take care of that as quickly as we are asked.
And that's what I was going to mention. That's one of the reasons why you do all of the things that you do. And again, these are, many of them are well known. Others are maybe not as well known. But this is the reason why you do all of the things that the Lodge does throughout the course of the year.
Absolutely. The foundation exists to support law enforcement in Hancock County, whether that's active, retired, or the families of the fallen. And in order to do that, we build positive interactions between youth and law enforcement. And we have tons and tons of events every year that help raise money and raise awareness so that when we have situations where an officer needs support, we're able to provide that.
And that mission is supported through the myriad of things that we are going to be talking about here in the very near future, things like the Halloween parade and, you know, other community events that we have talked about in the past. But again, I guess the point being, when we get this police video, this press conference later today, we would do well to remember that there are real human beings on both sides of this particular tragic interaction. And while we definitely want to know and understand what happened, again, accountability, transparency, learning from every incident is important, but equally important to remember that these are officers who make split-second life and death decisions, and it's not always easy.
Absolutely. That's one of the reasons that we do some of our programming. For example, yeah, we have Cops and Cones coming up on Wednesday. There will not be robots with badges at Dietz's. There will be police officers there, actual human beings who go home and have dinner with their families every night, just like you do. Gentlemen who coach their kids' softball teams. All of the things, they are people too. So yes, I would definitely encourage everyone to remember that, especially since our officers are trained, very, very highly trained individuals who know what they're doing. So the Monday morning quarterbacking probably doesn't really have a place here.
Yeah. Again, Teresa White is the president of the Fort Finley FOP Lodge 20 Foundation. We have a link to all that they do to support law enforcement within the community at our webpage. Go to goodmornings.net for that. Teresa, thanks very much once again for the time. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Well, everyone knows someone who takes better care of their pets than they do themselves. Honestly, most of us probably fall into that category because we want to ensure that our furry family members are living their best life. And joining us this morning to recap this past week's Super Zoo event, the industry's largest pet product marketplace in Las Vegas, Nevada, is pet trend expert Svetlana Bisaquino with the standout products and trends proving that pet care has become self-care. And Svetlana, for those who are not familiar with this event, how would you describe Super Zoo? I've heard it's almost kind of like the Consumer Electronics Show meets Comic-Con.
Oh, yeah. It is so energetic here. Let me tell you, we are North America's largest, most attended pet retail industry event. And if you can believe it, I am currently surrounded by over 6 football fields worth of products, over 1,000 of which are totally new, only debuting here before they hit the stores. So this is really where the whole industry comes together to see what is next in pet care.
So what are some of the big trends that are being highlighted that you are seeing in pet products this year?
Well, one big one I've noticed this year, and I don't want to make the dog owners mad, but the cats are really stealing the spotlight this time. We have so many new products for everything from functional nutrition. There's this brand called Charlie Bear, and they do meal toppers that can help with digestion and dental health and even aging. And then we have a ton of new mental enrichment products, like the Trixie brand. They can take your cat from zen to zoomies in no time. I love their lick and play balls. They're 3 different flavored balls. And Giddy Kitty is a great brand for this too. They make things like flower-shaped treat dispensers. All of these are so great to reduce anxiety and to satisfy those natural hunting instincts.
So how long before we see some of these things in the stores?
Well, they're definitely heading your way soon. Okay. We are not open to the public. We are a pet retail industry event.
Right.
But give it a little bit of time and you should be seeing it on shelves as well as e-commerce online. They will be soon.
Okay. So I just want to give folks that be on the lookout for these sort of things. Pets right now, this is a good time to be a pet because it seems like pet care is changing for the better every single day. What is the latest with respect to pet care?
Well, I've really noticed how pet owners are now applying the same standards that they hold their own products to what they are buying for their pets. So, for example, connected monitoring, AI for your health. We have devices here at SuperZoo like the Talkdale Smart Wearable Health Monitor. It's almost like our Apple Watches or our Fitbits, and it will actually send you predictive alerts if it sees anything abnormal. Plus, I've seen a great device called the Mung AI, and this is a robot camera that will look for risks like your pet having prolonged inactivity or escaping or even fighting with another pet, and it will then release treats and calming scents to help diffuse those situations.
Wow, that is cool. Now, these wearables, like you attach them to the collar of your pet, or?
Exactly. That one is a collar. The tail talk goes right around their neck.
Okay.
Very
all right. Very cool. So every one of these events, you always have stuff that is, really spectacular, really gets people talking. Some of it may be a little out there, a little ambitious, whatever it might happen to be. What have you seen that from the show floor that has got everybody buzzing, that everybody's talking about?
Ooh, there are 2 I've seen that the booth is never empty. It's always crowded. So one is the Pet Vet First Aid Kit. This actually has 125 products in it. Things like beef flavored charcoal if they eat something poisonous, or a wound wash and hydrogel to seal it. But I really love that it comes with a vet first aid guide, very easy to follow. They even have a mini version to take it on the go. And the other product I've been loving, there's a brand called Lou Lounge, and they make clothing that is pet hair resistant. So decreases the mess before it even happens.
Wow.
Hair slides right off.
Wow. That, both of those are sort of things like, man, why couldn't they have thought of that sooner? I mean, what took so long? Those are great ideas. So again, SuperZoo happening over the past several days in Las Vegas, Nevada, largest pet product marketplace in North America for the entire industry. Svetlana Bisaquino with us this morning from SuperZoo. Where do we get, even though, as you mentioned, this is closed to the public, folks can get a look at what's going on. Where do we find that?
You can learn more about us and all of the products I've mentioned at superzoo.org, and we're also on all of the major social channels. So definitely keep an eye out so you know when these come to your store.
All right, Svetlana, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thanks so so much for having me.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
In the news business, there are two separate and distinct groups: breaking news and the news that is already broken. These are their stories.
A suspicious object outside of a firehouse in Washington, D.C. triggered a bomb squad response and snarled rush hour traffic on Wednesday morning before authorities identified it as an adult toy. I'm not sure exactly what kind of toy it was specifically, but police were called around 7 a.m. to D.C. Fire and EMS Station 20 after an electronic device with exposed wires was spotted outside the building. The police explosive ordnance disposal unit shut down traffic for 2 hours while it investigated the object before eventually concluding it was an electronic portable pump device. I don't even want to know what that would be used for. Traffic was backed up for 2 hours, but the individual responsible has not been identified. Also in the broken news, a stray cat is safe. After surviving an 800-mile trip from New Jersey to Athens, Georgia, underneath a student's car, is traveling back to the University of Georgia, junior Jaden Sawyer discovered the cat after noticing a paw reaching out from beneath her parked vehicle nearly 11 hours after she left New Jersey. The cat had been under her car that whole time. Campus police and animal rescuers struggled to free the cat, eventually getting help from a local auto repair shop that actually had to dismantle parts of the car to get to the cat. The feline, now named Jersey, is doing well, we're told, and will soon be available for adoption. So, glad that has a happy ending, but that's crazy. What a wild ride for that cat. And finally, in the broken news this morning, speaking of animal stories, a person aboard a vessel sailing in the Arctic region off the northern coast of Norway has been fined more than $5,000 for using a foghorn to wake a sleeping polar bear. That's one of those that, what are you thinking, man? What are you doing? The incident occurred earlier this month after occupants of the boat spotted the bear resting on land before someone sounded the ship's horn, causing the animal to wake up and relocate. Local regulations strictly prohibit needlessly disturbing, attracting, or pursuing polar bears, which are a protected species in the region since 1972. The individual responsible, to their credit, the individual responsible who did this really monumentally dumb thing, did agree to pay the fine without any appeal. But really, come on, man. Sounding a foghorn to wake up the polar bear. What are you thinking? Good golly. There you go. That is today's broken news report. An update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
It's the WFIN Virtual Car Show. Car show calendar and ride report. Show off your ride, whether it's two or four wheels. Plus, find out where the rides and the shows are happening all in one place.
Just go to WFIN.com.
It's chrome and horsepower on display online. The WFIN Virtual Car Show calendar and ride report. Thanks to Details Auto Spot, Lorette Chevrolet Cadillac, Fields Automotive Service, and 1330 WFIN and 95.5 FM.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. Excuse me there. I broadened my throat there for just a second. Chokes me up. The 2026 Retirement Expectations Survey from financial services company Thrivent is out, and in it, nearly half of American workers say they will never be able to fully retire. Now, although 58% of workers do think that they will have enough money to retire on time, 47% remain skeptical that they will ever be able to fully retire, and 36% of workers expect to have to continue earning a paycheck of some kind during their retirement, in retirement. This, again, the 2026 Retirement Expectations Survey from Thrivent. 64%, we're just not saving enough, is what it boils down to. 64% of people admit to focusing more on immediate everyday finances than on long-term retirement planning. And 35% of respondents in the survey feel that they are lagging behind their peers in retirement readiness. And the main culprit? Inflation. Things just getting more expensive, and there's just not the extra money to save. Inflation heavily impacts current planning. 70% of retirees cite inflation as a negative factor. But these are really depressing numbers, honestly. Although, again, to be fair, still a majority of workers do believe that they will have enough money to retire on time. This is a growing concern year after year in these surveys, and there are a lot of questions, a lot of people asking, is the American dream dead? Well, if the ultimate goal, you know, the ultimate end point of the quote-unquote American dream is to be able to retire at some point and live your senior years in comfort without any fear or worry, then at least according to this survey, may not be dead, but the American dream certainly appears to be on life support. So happening around town, the Fort Finley Playhouse second stage production of The Diary of Anne Frank is coming up, and members of the cast are with us this morning, Brenna Rosengarten and George Russmeyer, and thank you both for taking the time this morning. We appreciate it. This is an interesting show. I have to admit, I have never, I know this is a well-known play. I have never seen it, actually. So talk a little bit about what this story encompasses. I mean, where does this pick up in the story, and, you know, how far does this go? I mean, kind of lay this out for us here. It's a well-known story, yeah. But
so it starts, our play starts in the very beginning when they first go into hiding.
Okay.
And it kind of follows Anne Frank, who's a Jewish girl during the Holocaust, right, and the people who she was in hiding with.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of ebbs and flows and gives bits and pieces and all of that into their daily lives, and then also up until their time where they were unfortunately found from their hiding place, the annex. So yeah, it starts from when they get into hiding and then into.
So this goes the entire story that we're familiar with beginning to end, as it were. What is interesting about Anne Frank's story is that, and you know, part of this is because of her age at the time. She's a young teenager going through all of the teenager kind of things in a most unusual and unfortunate situation, to say the least. But it is not all surrounding the tragedy and the horror that is unfolding around her. There are an awful lot of very human and even funny moments during the course of her time in hiding and her family's time in hiding.
Yeah.
Well, it's unfortunate for Anne being a teenager and Peter and Margot, Anne's sister, being teenagers stuck with a bunch of adults in a cramped space for 2 years. So sure. Yeah, there definitely is some fun interactions, and Anne is a joyful person.
Yes.
So she definitely brings some humor to the situation, regardless of the severity of it.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, this is really difficult subject matter. How challenging is that to present that in a way that, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, the point of any play, any musical, any stage production is to entertain the audience, but not losing sight of the fact that this is such a tragedy and such tragic material.
Yeah, and I think what I found is trying to separate like the heavy material from the part that's so joyful, mm-hmm. And really making those joyful moments be truly like expressed, rather than that fear that is constantly looming. Like, I know my character goes into it a lot, about like the fear behind it, but then she's also just a teenager. Mm-hmm. So it's really interesting trying to navigate that. And I think that's what's so important, is separating those two.
When you decided to take on this subject matter and this play, I mean, obviously, you know, that's a big undertaking and a big ask, and you know, how much apprehension, how much excitement to really get into such a meaty production in that way.
Well, being 64 years old, I became familiar with the story back when I was her age, basically.
Right.
So I've got memories of that. I've got memories of learning about the Holocaust. And I think what's important about the way we're telling it is that these are real people. Anybody could have been caught up in the situation. Mm-hmm. They're extraordinary at times, but they're like anybody else most of the time. And I think that's what grounds me personally.
Yeah.
My character joined them about five, six months into when they first went into hiding. So that there's that dynamic, and I'm separated from a woman I love who was not a Jew. Mm-hmm. So that's what's in my mind during the whole show. So hopefully kind of carries forward and present it.
You use the word there. This is important. I mean, this is an important work, and you know, again, that also not lost on you as you're putting this together. That this is important, an important story to preserve.
Yes, and I think with that, like specifically when I found out, because I found out a long time, like January, I think it was. And when I found out, it was like, I obviously so excited and just so, it's so emotionally fulfilling to mm-hmm. have a role that is so like complex, and also have a show with like the amazing cast and crew that we have. So it's very exciting for me, but I was also so nervous because it's such an important show that like so much pressure to almost do it like the justice that it deserves. And
absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you always want to do that. We talk about this a lot of times when you're doing familiar shows, you know, especially things that, you know, people have seen movies. I mean, if you're doing The Music Man or The Sound of Music, whatever it might happen to be, you know, people are familiar with the story and you want to do that justice and all of that. But here it becomes even more so and more important. So The Diary of Anne Frank, give us all of the details on the show itself.
Okay, it's directed by Seth Commissioni. This is his first time directing.
Wow. Nothing like jumping in with both feet.
Yeah.
But he's more than up to the challenge. He's acted in many shows at the Playhouse. He knows what he's doing. And I think bringing the level of seriousness, but also giving us, making it comfortable for us.
Yeah, mm-hmm. He's phenomenal, truly.
He's being mentored by Jordan Gottschalk, who is also the producer of the show. And if you have time, I'll tell you who's in it.
Okay, absolutely. Again, these are the second stage productions are generally smaller cast. I mean, it's a small, tight-knit cast here.
So we have a total of 11 people involved. There's ourselves, and then playing Otto Frank is Trevor Kyles. Playing Mrs. Frank is Mrs. Frank, as we pronounce it in the show, is Carrie Troutman. Margot Frank is being played by Rachel Cunningham. The Von Dons, who are the other family that are with us, there's Matt Kettner as Mr. Von Don, Betsy Herman as Mrs. Von Don, Cameron Levi as Peter Von Don. And then we have Allison Cunningham playing Meep, who is one of the Dutch people helping the people in hiding, and Dominic Merrill is playing Mr. Crawler and a Nazi. And then we have Seth Ebanks coming in late playing a Nazi as well.
And you open when?
We open the 27th of August. We're running 4 days, but we'll have five performances. Thursday and Friday is 8 p.m. performances. Saturday, we have a 3 p.m. and 8 p.m. And Sunday, the 30th, is a 3 p.m. performance. And you can get tickets at workfamilyplayhouse.org right now. And I'll be answering the phone from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. today at 567-525-3636. And we'll be there in person from noon to 3 p.m. at the Playhouse, 300 West Sandusky Street.
Great place to see a show, especially a show like this. Really intimate setting for The Diary of Anne Frank. Later this month at the Fort Finley Playhouse. And again, Brenna Rosengarten and George Russmeyer, thanks very much for being with us this morning. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program this morning. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage, which, of course, is goodmornings.net. Also, if you're a regular listener to the podcast, we would appreciate it if you would take a moment or two to leave us a rating or review on your favorite podcasting platform. That will help others discover the show as well, and we thank you very much for your help with that. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.